Radio 3. If you'd like to take your Schubert's Nocturnally, there's a chance at 1 o'clock tonight as Through the Night sets off with a recent performance, Valery Gergiev conducting of Schubert's Summer Journey, as it's been called, his ninth symphony, the great C major symphony. BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online. It's just gone 11 o'clock. Time now for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Fear not, the jazz forecast for the next 90 minutes is looking good. I'll be profiling Weather Report's iconic bassist Jaco Pastorius in the company of musician and bass player extraordinaire Lawrence Cottle. And he'll reveal to us his plans for a special tribute to one of the most influential bass players of all time, who would have turned 60 this year, so stay tuned. Kevin Legendre will be here to preview some of his highlights from this year's London Jazz Festival. And there's concert music from drummer Tom Bancroft's new project, Trio Red, featuring pianist Tom Corley and the man described by Bancroft as half-fruit, half-fridge, bassist Per Zanussi. To start things off, pianist Peter James, who describes his own personal musical journey as an exploration of the tensions between form and freedom, aiming within his compositions to leave room for the unexpected whilst being mindful of the individual players he's writing for. His rhythm section are pals from his days at the Royal Academy of Music, Jeremy Brown on bass and Thomas Hooper on the drums. So from his recently released second album, Soul Story, let's hear Headlong.
Thank you.
Peter James Trio with Headlong from their new release, which is out on the Mulberry Tree music label. And that track, written by Peter, is one of the 11 beautifully crafted compositions on this CD. And there's great interplay with his band members, Jeremy Brown on bass and Thomas Hooper on drums, throughout this stellar recording. Next up, a preview of this year's London Jazz Festival in the company of Kevin Legendre. Before we hear from Kevin, let's have a listen to one of the artists playing at this year's festival, clarinetist Aaron Gosch, and a track from one of his highly anticipated second release, Primal Odyssey. The album features contributions from the current BBC Radio 3 new generation jazz artist Shebaka Hutchins. From the new recording, we're going to play The Red Fort, which perfectly demonstrates Aaron's influences of South Asian music fused with a funky contemporary jazz edge. On this recording, he's dropped the piano and tabla, which featured so heavily on his debut CD, Northern Namaste. And this time he's gone for a solid quintet with the brass doubling on many of the tracks to give it a much heavier sound. Have a listen to this. The almost hypnotic sounds of clarinetist Aaron Gosch with Idris Rahman on tenor sax, Shebaka Hutchins on bass clarinet and Liran Donin on bass, Pat Illingworth was playing the drums, taken from his recently released CD Primal Odyssey, and that was the track Lal Killa, Red Fort. Well, now it's time to welcome fellow Jazz Lineup presenter and music journalist Kevin Legendre, who'll be navigating us through some of his highlights of this year's London Jazz Festival in association with BBC Radio 3. Welcome, Kevin.
Hiya, Claire.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
So that was Aaron. He's doing quite a bit on the festival. Let's talk about his... He's doing a festival on the move.
I was about to say, he's the guy who's shuttling around one venue to the next. He's doing some workshops as well. And he's just such a compelling performer. I've seen him a couple of times at the Pizza Express. He's really, really good.
Mm.
And you talk about his music being almost hypnotic. I think it is hypnotic when you see it on stage. He's very expressive. And I love this new record and the way that they're using the horns, this unusual...
Yes, the doubling up.
Three horn lineup.
Yes, yeah.
Bass clarinet, tenor sax, clarinet. It works really well. And I think it's interesting that given the fact that his Indian roots are very important to him, they're prominent in his music, he's not using any Indian instruments. It's a very, very intriguing, powerful mixture. It's a brave record and it's very, very successful, I think, artistically.
And he's also doing a workshop, which will be good, on the 12th of November. That's at 10:30 a.m. At the South Bank in the function room there, which is free. And then he's off to the National Maritime Museum. I've not been to that venue. What's that all about?
Me neither. I've no idea what it's like.
Good acoustics, you'd imagine.
Yeah, and a nice backdrop. So yeah. Rolling seas and all that.
So what's your sort of overall feel of how it's all going? There's lots of themes and strands going on.
Well, I think the challenge for the London Jazz Festival is always to be better than the previous year.
Yeah.
Because it's gone from strength to strength, and last year was very good. And I think what they're trying to do is strike a balance between, let's say, the core values, your Ornette Colemans and your McCoy Tyners, these people who are the founding fathers of the music, and current events in the music, new artists, people who are coming through, taking it in different directions. So, there, as you know, jazz is this broad church with all these different elements, and the whole point is how can you strike some kind of balance between it all? And I think that's what they're doing, really. Mm.
Well, let's keep the Asian theme going, Kevin, because let's play a track by a real master of percussion, Zakir Hussain, who's playing on the 11th of November at the Royal Festival Hall. Now, that's going to be great, isn't it?
Yeah. He is a brilliant tabla player, and he also plays various percussion, and he also has a very, very gentle but kind of beautiful voice as well that he uses at times. And he's one of those musicians who is very, very versatile, who can play straight Indian classical music, which is completely raga-based, and then he can play with a jazz ensemble. He's played with the likes of Charles Lloyd, John McLaughlin, Jan Garbarek, and fit into these improvised situations really well. So I think that jazz and Indian music are two languages that are completely natural to him. And any time I've seen him on stage, he's just excelled, especially when the music goes into quite heavily improvised territory. I saw him with Charles Lloyd several years ago with another drummer, Eric Harland, and it was just unbelievable.
I bet.
Really, really special. I mean, what he was doing in terms of rhythmic complexity and taking these impossible cycles of beats and breaking them down into even more impossible cycles of beats, but still drawing you in.
Yeah.
Not just being technical and virtuosic for the sake of it,
yeah,
but just getting lost in the music, in all his kind of talent for the music as well. He's very, very good.
Superstar. Let's hear Zakir Hussain from the album Making Music. This is the track You and Me. Thank you. From the album Making Music, that was Zakir Hussain and the track You and Me. So, Kevin, there's lots of diverse events happening at this year's festival, and a couple of things that caught my eye, perhaps initially because I'm a singer, and I saw that the Big Sing this year, which I've done before, which is great fun, is being led by Gwyneth Herbert. Way In to the Way Out, which is an introduction to jazz with Nathaniel Facey and Shaney Forbes, and the wonderful Chris Potter demonstrating all his tricks of the trade. I mean, this stuff is priceless, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think that's the other thing about the London Jazz Festival, which is really important, is that it has this educational component as well for people who are either aspiring musicians or just interested in how you do this magical scientific stuff called jazz. Mm. And you want to know about what mouthpiece Chris Potter uses fingering techniques or whatever it may be, or having some kind of insight into the nuts and bolts of the music. I think the workshops and the Way Into the Way Out session, which is basically musicians talking about the history of the music and explaining how it's evolved throughout the ages, I think that's really, really important, because there's still a lot of demystification that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Jazz can still be a frightening word for some people, and when you have the exponents of the music actually saying, well, this is what happened back in New Orleans, and then it turned into this, and then it turned into something else. Don't be scared by it, because all of the fancy improvisation and all of the chords that we use, there are certain principles, and I genuinely believe that it is accessible to anybody if you have the right people talking about it in an accessible way.
Absolutely. Chris Potter, I know you're talking to, which will be recorded for Jazz Lineup. I mean, if I was an up-and-coming saxophonist, I would just be there at 6 a.m. waiting for the front seat for that.
He's carrying the legacy of Michael Brecker forward, which is no mean feat. He's a brilliant player, but I also think that he's a very, very good composer as well, because he's so gifted as a soloist that his compositional quality is maybe overlooked to a certain extent. And I think it'd be really interesting to try and get into his mind and understand what the relationship between a soloist and a composer is, how he does all of this really, really complex, impressive stuff as a soloist, and then goes about the composing process too.
It's interesting you mentioned Michael Brecker there, because another thing that jumped out the page for me, I think because when I first started doing Jazz Lineup, I interviewed Michael Brecker and I was so nervous. He was, but he was just the best interview in, made me feel very relaxed. And sadly, of course, he died. And his wife at the Pessoa Room at the South Bank Centre on Saturday, the 12th of November, is bringing awareness about his legacy and, of course, his awful bone marrow issues that eventually killed him. It's called More to Live For, and it's a landmark film being shown. And I just thought that would be lovely. I'm going to definitely go to that and hear her speak, because remembering Michael's always a good thing.
I think that's really important, because sometimes we forget that these incredible musicians are also human beings.
Yeah.
They have the same issues have to deal with, health problems or emotional problems or family problems or whatever it may be. And actually showing a human side of jazz and saying, well, this is a musician who's a normal human being who has the same kind of tragedies in his life as other people do, I think is very important.
Yeah, and I think that film will show some really great footage as well. I think it's going to be very moving. Let's talk about the next track, which I absolutely loved, and this sort of massive event about the silent film about Louis Armstrong.
Yeah. I think this is really special, because even though the London Jazz Festival is essentially about all these great gigs, it's like this feast of amazing concerts, when we have a special event like this, which is a film, a silent movie with a live score, a score written by Wynton Marsalis, performed by a band led by Wycliffe Gordon, the trombonist, and the film about Louis Armstrong, you think, well, this is different.
Yeah.
And that's why I was drawn to this straight away.
Yeah.
Because the film has been critically acclaimed. It's by a director who I don't know, called Dan Pritzer. And it's about Louis Armstrong's early life in New Orleans. So the backdrop is the Big Easy, the Crescent City, and the birth of jazz. And apparently it's also inspired by elements of Charlie Chaplin's great silent film work. So it's breathtaking as an idea. And then you think, Wynton Marsalis has written the score, and there's going to be a live band led by Wycliffe Gordon,
it's
this incredible trombonist. And you think, well, that's
an
something
event,
which is out of the ordinary.
An event within an event.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. And that's going to happen at the Barbican. So they've got very comfortable seats.
Yeah, nice seats.
Nice big spacious venue to sit back and really be big bowled screen. Over by a big yeah. screen. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's hear the track Sweet George Brown, played by Wycliffe Gordon from his album The Search. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3 on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. And if you just tuned in, I'm previewing some highlights from this year's London Jazz Festival in the company of Kevin Legendre. So, Kevin, BBC Radio 3 will broadcast over 40 hours of music from this 10-day festival. That's good going, isn't it?
It's great going.
And there's a free festival mobile app, did you know, that you can share your photos and experiences on? It's all very modern, isn't it?
All out assault. I love it.
A number of themes, as we've been talking about, run throughout the festival this year, Kevin. And reflecting on the tradition of jazz is really evident, isn't it?
Well, the Lewis film does that. I think it's the perfect statement. It's a kind of symbol of the roots of this music. And another group who basically come out of that really, really deep New Orleans tradition, which I'm really looking forward to, is the Soul Rebels Brass Band, who are playing at the Queen Elizabeth Hall on Wednesday, the 16th of November. Mm. And I remember, okay, a little personal story. One of my evangelical sort of epiphanic moments as somebody who was young listening to jazz, discovering jazz for the first time, was when I saw the Dirty Dozen Brass Band at Glastonbury on the same bill as Gil Scott-Heron and Lonnie Liston-Smith.
That's
can you imagine
bill.
That? This was back in the early 90s.
You'd have been in heaven. I see your little face now.
I was just astounded. I was astounded because that was the first time that I'd ever seen somebody with a sousaphone or a tuba or whatever it was, this snake-like thing wrapped around his body. And I was just completely blown away by the whole experience. And there's something about seeing a marching band on stage and seeing them move, which I think
I
is really
it very
important.
Emotional.
It's really emotional because you've got the spirit of the parade. Mm. And that's that really is jazz as popular music, where you think, okay, this is right in the heart of the city in New Orleans. It's people marching down the street, and they've got that direct connection with the people. And I think the best brass bands, even though they might be playing in concert halls or seated venues, they manage to convey that in the music. And Soul Rebels Brass Band really do that.
Brilliant. Well, let's hear Stevie Wonder's Living for the City by the Soul Rebels Brass Band. That was the Soul Rebels Brass Band from their album Unlock Your Mind, and that was, of course, Living for the City. So, Kevin, do you think the festivals really help to change people's attitude to jazz gigs, or even just introduce them to jazz, really? I mean, lots of people still come up to me and go, I've never been to a jazz gig before, and you think, well, why not? This could be a really great festival to bring more people in, couldn't it?
Absolutely, because it's a platform and a showcase for the music. It's a celebration of the music in its entirety. And I think the fact that you have a lot of these free foyer gigs at the Claw Ballroom or the Barbican, where people who might not be going for the main event of the night can just drop in and see some music and get pulled into it like that. It's like an open door that you can walk through, as opposed to saying, okay, well, you have to have all of this knowledge of the music before you go to it, because we do forget that jazz can be an intimidating word for a lot of people. And I think making it something which is quote-unquote user-friendly is really important. And I think they're making a genuine effort to do that.
And, you know, times are hard. We're in a recession. All this, you know, amazing free stuff.
I've seen some amazing free gigs at the London Jazz Festival where ordinarily you would expect to pay money to see these artists. So it's definitely, it's not something that's just disposable. It's something that's worthwhile.
Let's talk about, finally, Empirical.
Yeah. They're doing two gigs in one night. They're actually opening up for...
They're young, though, Kevin.
They've got energy to burn. They're opening up for Joachim Kuhn and Archie Shepp, doing a beautiful duet. That's at the South Bank Centre at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. And then they're winging their way to the Blackheath Horse after that. So
probably roller skating, you know, yeah. All that energy to burn. Well, let's hear now a track from their Elements of Truth album. We'll play the title track from Empirical. Kevin, thanks very much for coming
in.
Thank
you so much.
Empirical with the title track of their album, The Element of Truth. And many thanks to Kevin Ajonra for his great highlights of the forthcoming London Jazz Festival. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Well, next up, I'll be speaking with bassist, producer and arranger Lawrence Cottle about an exciting tribute project he's put together celebrating the artistry of the late electric bass pioneer Jaco Pastorius. Jaco would have celebrated his 60th birthday this year, so let's hear the master in action. Thank you. That was Jaco Pastorius and Continuum, and as I mentioned earlier, I'm joined now by bassist, producer and arranger, and of course big Jaco fan, Lawrence Cole. Tell us about Jaco Pastorius for anybody that's listening that's not familiar with the great man's work.
Jaco grew up in a musical family. He started as a drummer. He had an accident whilst playing American football that injured his arm quite badly, so he couldn't play the drums with any strength anymore, so he switched to bass guitar and just picked it up one day and started gigging that night, apparently.
He went on to be a master.
Yeah, absolutely. He completely changed the face of the instrument and innovated what is now known as modern bass guitar and brought it to the forefront of the band rather than sitting on a groove at the back. Mm. He played beautiful melodies with great sensitivity.
And worked with all the greats as well. I mean, he really had great collaborations. Weather Report. I mean, for me, the stuff with Joni Mitchell is just amazing. Pat Metheny.
Yeah. Oh, as soon as his first album came out in 1976, he was recognised worldwide as an innovative genius. And he worked with all those great names, and he became a superstar and embraced everything that went with that. But in his formative years, he was completely dedicated to music and just focused on his writing and his playing. He didn't drink or take drugs. Music was everything for him. Mm-hmm. He didn't use a lot of bottom end that bass players from that era were using. So he was using the back pickup of his Fender Jazz Bass, so it had a more toppy, punchy sound.
Mm. And that was a completely original thing. No one had done that before.
Well, it had been done before, but combined with his fierce technique from constant practice and playing gigs night after night, he developed a new approach from articulating fast rhythm and blues bass lines.
Because he started off with rhythm and blues. In fact, he liked so many different things. He was a big Elvis fan, and he loved all sorts of music.
Yeah, his tastes were very eclectic, from R&B, big band, funk. He even listened to classical music and was inspired by Bach and Stravinsky, as well as modern 20th century composers.
Did he ever play upright bass? Because if people aren't familiar with him, I'm sure they are, but obviously he's an electric bass pioneer, but did he ever have a go at the upright bass?
He did, but he said it fell apart with the humidity in Florida.
So the track we just heard, I mean, a very special track, because it was something that he would play live on gigs as a solo piece.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's quite a sort of unusual thing for a bass player to do, to be doing sort of solo pieces. Was that another sort of string to his bow, having the confidence to do that?
Definitely, yeah. It's a piece that he developed over years, just doing it as a solo piece on gigs with the R&B band that he was playing with at the time, Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders. Yeah, he played it and developed it on gigs, but for the recording, he wrote an incredible solo over the form of the piece, and he employed his trademark pentatonic patterns and odd groupings and the use of harmonics and double stops, chords as well. And these sort of things had never been executed on bass like this before. Mm. Because he started as a drummer, it was time was something that was paramount. So he had an innate sense of groove, and also studied all the great rhythm sections of R&B, Motown, big band and funk at the time. Mm. And when he perfected his articulation on the bass, he would lock into a groove that would just blow people away.
Yeah. You met Jaco, didn't you, in Boston? Was that during the 80s when you went to America?
How did
that happen?
I met him in 1980. I was studying at Berklee School of Music in Boston, and a friend of mine who I was there with knew Jaco, and Weather Report were playing in the theatre there. And he said, yeah, let's go down and hang out with Jaco. So it was such a thrill for me to meet the great man.
And, was he nice to you? Was he?
Yeah, he was brilliant. Yeah, and we hung out a bit in the day. We went to the sound check, and I was a keen juggler at the time, and he was as well. So we exchanged juggling patterns.
And
that was around when he just finished his second solo record, Word of Mouth. Mm. And he was so proud of it, and he was carrying a test pressing of it, and he played it to me and was pointing out all the killing bass bits whilst dancing around the room.
Oh, wow!
Yeah.
He really did modernise the big band idiom with Word of Mouth, wasn't it, in 1981. And we're going to play a track now. Let's talk about the track we're going to hear, which is called Three Views of a Secret, because I think this is my favourite Jaco melody. You're going to do this as well at Ronnie's?
Yep. It has such strong memories for me. I want to stay quite close to the original arrangement. You'll hear Toots Thielemans on this version, but there won't be a harmonica player at our gig, but I've arranged it as a feature for Julian Siegel,
great,
who'll play it on tenor.
Fantastic. So let's hear Jaco Pastorius from Word of Mouth, and it's Three Views of a Secret. ¶¶ Three Views of a Secret, the wonderful Jaco Pastorius, and that's taken from word of mouth, and I'm talking to bassist Lawrence Cottle about Jaco Pastorius. So let's talk a bit more about the collaborators that Jaco had. I mean, very, very famous for working in Weather Report. Joe Zawinul said he was electrifying, and like Jimi Hendrix, the sort of electric magic that he had. But you told me that he hustled that gig. He really was a hustler.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Once he'd made his statement and produced his first record, he decided it was time to join a band. And he could see that Weather Report would be the perfect vehicle for him. So he went to a concert in Florida and walked up to Joe Zawinul after the gig and famously said, "I'm John Francis Pastorius III, and I'm the greatest bass player in the world." Zawinul wasn't in the mood for that, but over the next year or so, Jaco hit him with letters and sent him tapes, and eventually when a spot opened up in the band, Jaco got the call and joined the band as a bass player, but soon was co-producing the albums and writing material for the records.
There you go. So tenacity really paid off in that instance. But I bet Joe Zawinul thought, wow, all the time this guy's been out there, because he really did bring the band new life, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you think he would have been easy to play with? I mean, I've watched some video footage where he's really clowning around a bit too much, and it's quite difficult for the front people to sort of hold him back. But when he was on form, it must have been magical. But
terrific. I mean, it must have been, he had such a powerful force. By his own admission, he said that. He had such a command of the instrument, such flawless technique. So I think he was easy to play with. His presence was sometimes overpowering, but he's still so much in the groove and in the pocket and driving the band with his flawless technique. Mm. And also, you know, starting off as a drummer, his sense of the pulse was phenomenal.
Mm. So you must meet loads of young bass players in the course of your career. I mean, do they share your love and passion for Jaco and cite him as a big influence on their playing?
Yes, a lot of them are unaware of his playing, which is strange, but they have it kind of second hand. They'll be inspired by the generation that came after Jaco, that we were all inspired by, and they will learn from somebody or transcribe solo from somebody that is so Jaco influenced.
Like who?
They're like Marcus Miller's classic, of course. When Jaco's first album came out, Marcus didn't have it off his turntable for a year and a half, just transcribing, learning to play all the Jaco lines like everybody was in the 70s. So people will be inspired by Marcus, for example, and play something very Jaco-esque and think that they're copying something from Marcus or obviously Victor Bailey, who followed Jaco Pastorius into Weather Report.
But some of them actually say they've not heard Jaco.
Exactly, yeah. I did a masterclass somewhere the other day, and somebody asked if I could recommend a solo bass guitar piece that they could perform in their final recital. And I said Continuum, the track that we listened to earlier on. And I said Continuum from Jaco Pastorius' first album. And he said, "Oh, how do you spell that?" I said, "Oh, C-O-N-T-W, he said, "No, the other one." "What? Jaco Pastorius?" "Yeah, how do you spell that?" He hadn't heard of Jaco. My mum thinks I'm doing a tribute to Joe Pasquale.
That's allowed. At Ronnie's, you're doing two sets. Let's talk about your big band and who you've got in playing on that night.
Well, I'm very lucky to have a superb lineup. We have Gary Husband on drums.
Great.
My great old friend Nigel Hitchcock on alto sax. He'll be leading the sax section, which also comprises of Alex Garnett, Sammy Main, Julian Siegel, I mentioned earlier, and Claire McInerney on baritone sax.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and then we've got my old favourites on trumpets, Noel Langley, Pat White, Sid Gould and Martin Shaw.
Wow, it's going to be great. No piano, so there's lots of rest on your head.
Yeah, lots of space. And,
great.
Yeah.
So tell us about this track that we're going to play out now. It's called Liberty City.
Again, this is a track that I first heard with Jaco when he played me that test pressing in 1981. And it starts with a killing brass introduction and goes on to one of his trademark licks that he used over the years. And incredible solo from Herbie Hancock all through the track.
Brilliant. So you're at Ronnie Scott's for one night only, two shows on that night celebrating Jaco Pastorius's 60th birthday. Can't wait to hear it, Lawrence. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks, Claire.
Thank you. Thank you.
Liberty City, played by Jaco Pastorius. And our thanks to Lawrence for coming in today. And we wish him a great night at Ronnie Scott's on Saturday, the 19th of November. Don't forget, on Saturdays, there are two shows, 7 p.m. and then again at midnight. So you can take in more than one concert if you think you've got the stamina. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Well, next up, highlights of today's concert set featuring drummer Tom Bancroft's new outfit, Trio Red, who were barely a week old when they performed at the Lagavulin Distillery as part of this year's Isla Jazz Festival. The band members include the London-based pianist Tom Cawley, best known for his own trio, Curios, and currently in Peter Gabriel's touring band, the Norwegian bassist Per Zanussi, and on drums, of course, Tom Bancroft. So here are some recorded highlights from that set, recorded on Friday the 16th of September, the opening night of the festival. And here's the trio, starting with the Charles Mingus composition, Jump Monk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to introduce to the band on the piano, the wonderful and the marvellous Tom Cawley. And on the bass, the brilliant and the tall Per Zanussi.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Evolving Pattern, and before that, Jump Monk. And that was Tom Bancroft's Trio Red, recorded at Isla Jazz Festival 2011 on Friday the 16th of September at the Lagavulin Distillery. Tom Bancroft on drums, Per Zanussi playing bass, and Tom Corley on piano. That's nearly it from Jazz Lineup this week. Next week, very special concert music from the London Jazz Festival featuring the Julian Siegel Quartet, Robert Mitchell's Trio, and Dennis Baptiste. Plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11 o'clock. And this week, Jez presents Russian saxophonist Alexei Kruglov. To finish today's show, let's have an exclusive from a preview copy of wonderful singer Christine Tobin's forthcoming album, Sailing to Byzantium. Christine performs at this year's London Jazz Festival at the Purcell Room on November the 15th. And here she is in fine form with When You Are Old. Till next time, from me, Claire Martin. Bye-bye.
When you are old and gray and full of sleep, and nodding by the fire, take down this book and slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love, false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing and bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced upon the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars.
Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to Through the Night on BBC Radio 3, and I'll start today with Schubert's Symphony No. 9, known as the Great C Major. Schubert almost certainly knew that time was running out on him when he composed it, and he was understandably anxious to hear it performed. But Vienna's orchestral players balked at a symphony lasting almost an hour, and it was only Robert Schumann's enthusiasm a decade after Schubert's death that finally secured its premiere. For Schumann, that very length was its chief pleasure. As he said, it's like a novel in four chapters. Well, this performance of Schubert's Ninth is from a concert given in Stockholm in January 2011. Valeri Gergiev conducts the Swedish Radio Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.